From the Protein House, Eat with a Purpose text line. From the 785, I was just seeing if they blocked me from the text line. Well, obviously not. But the only thing is, when you do that, I'm just so tempted to do it.
Yeah, you're the guy that bans everybody.
I do. I don't really do it. I just say I do it. But
yeah, you really don't.
Double I always say, like, banned, and I say double banned, and somebody comes back and says, don't do it, don't do it. I was just kidding. I said, how could I read your text if I banned you?
Triple banned.
Triple banned. Gone. It's very easy to do, by the way. We just click something and you're banned. And it's for all the shows, not just this one. And I could be a total jerk off and just do it for the rest of the day. Maybe you love texting Fesco every day and telling him how much you love him.
Ice up, son. Ice up.
You might as well say I've been drinking because the text line all thinks I'm drunk.
I'm a man.
You can verify, Dusty. I am sober. I am sober.
You're high.
I'm not high either.
Nope. You have not moved to Missouri yet to claim your medicinal card.
I live in Missouri.
He's still a Kansasian.
I work in Kansas. I live in Missouri.
Right. Nope. The only thing that he's got in front of him, folks, is a little can of NOS and something to put the excess tobacco in.
Now, I'll be honest with you, I'll be fully transparent. I have been dealing with a few things, and occasionally what I'm dealing with, it will slur my words from time to time. I'll just be totally transparent and honest with you. That's what happens. Might be what's happening tonight, but it doesn't change my thoughts on the Chiefs. I just might slur it a little bit. Just going to have to deal with it. Just listen to it very slowly. When you're on the podcast, but just speed it up, and then it'll make a lot more sense. See what I'm saying, Dust Man? It all comes together. I don't know how you felt about this weekend's game. I know it wasn't a good game for the Kansas City Chiefs, although we're spoiled. I mean, we're spoiled if Pat Mahomes isn't throwing for 300 yards, 310 yards, 320. Heck, he threw for 303 the other week and four touchdowns, and we're like, oh, what's wrong with Pat Mahomes? Not really, but you're sitting there going, I'm just expecting this guy to light up the scoreboard every time. But you know what? Sometimes it doesn't work. And I'll be honest with you, you know why this week wasn't a good week for the Kansas City Chiefs? It's very simple. They didn't protect Pat Mahomes. Eric Fisher was beaten like a drum. It was not a good week. I was almost like shades of James Harrison from the Pittsburgh Steelers, you know, coming out and scaring him. Remember when Pittsburgh suited him up last year only because he scares Eric Fisher? Eric Fisher's not been a problem this year. It was a bad game. But you know what? When the Chiefs don't have a bad game, you know what they still do? They still win. The NFL is any given Sunday, and they always say it, but it's true. And no, I'm not talking about the Al Pacino movie with Willie Beeman, Any Given Sunday. Great movie, by the way. It was kind of the coming out party for Under Armour because it's the Miami Sharks were all fitted in. But a bad game is what the New England Patriots had against the Tennessee Titans. I mean, they had it handed to them. And that was not a good loss. If anything, this weekend was incredibly gratifying for the Kansas City Chiefs. It gave them a cushion to even if they drop this game against the Rams, which, to be honest with you, I don't think they're going to do. I think Cooper Kupp was a big loss for the Rams now that he's gone all year. I'll take the Chiefs' chances against the Rams because, again, I think this will be like the Rams versus the Saints a couple weeks ago, where it's, all right, offensive firepower. I'll put the Chiefs' offense against the Rams. So I think the Chiefs are going to beat the Rams. I don't think they're scared of the Rams. I don't think the Chiefs are scared of anybody. Matter of fact, I think teams are scared of the Chiefs. I think teams are scared of Tyreek Hill and what he can do to them. And if he can't do it, Kareem Hunt will sit there and hurdle over you. Or Travis Kelce will eat all day long. Or Sammy Watkins will probably play this week. Be that complimentary piece to Tyreek Hill. No, I'm not worried about this offense. You want to get in a track meet? I have never thought about this with the Kansas City Chiefs. I've never sat here and said, I hope the Chiefs don't get in a track meet because they won't win. It's because your quarterback was Alex Smith. Alex Smith couldn't win track meets for you. You've got a guy now that can. And I don't know if you've been paying attention to Alex Smith in Washington. He's not having a bad year. 90.7 quarterback rating, over 2,045 yards, but 10 touchdowns. He's won 4 out of his last 5 games. Listen to his throwing totals. He threw for 178 last week. He threw for 306 in a blowout loss to the Atlanta Falcons. And then he threw for 178, 178, 163. Matter of fact, he's passed for exactly 178 yards in 3 of his last 4 games, and they've won each of those games. And that's only because everything else has to work perfect. Remember, they traded for HaHa Clinton Dix, second-rated safety on Pro Football Focus behind DJ Swearinger, who, by the way, is with the Washington Redskins. But no, this was good for the Chiefs. The Chiefs got this 2-game cushion over the New England Patriots. New England still has to go play at Pittsburgh. That was a huge game for the Titans. And I remember when I was filling in for Carrington on Friday, we took a look at the weekend and what's the game you're really looking at. To me, it was the Titans. This was a prime place if the Patriots are going to pick up an L, which they need to do because they have that precious tiebreaker over the Kansas City Chiefs. Because I think home field advantage means so much difference if you're playing New England and Foxborough, where they just don't lose very often. Now, I know the Chiefs beat them last year in game 1 of the season, but it's much different when you're playing them during the playoffs. Take your chances at Arrowhead Stadium against them. Pittsburgh said 6-2-1. To me, the Pittsburgh Steelers scare me more than New England Patriots, even though the Chiefs went to Pittsburgh and beat them. It's a different team now. They're playing defense. They get their confidence on offense. No Le'Veon Bell. Don't have to worry about him. But I'm not so sure the Steelers need Le'Veon Bell. They have found the chemistry with James Conner. He's one of the leading rushers in the NFL. And I am still shocked that Le'Veon Bell, who is in Pittsburgh now, didn't show up. Now, the one thing about Le'Veon Bell, he can be franchised next year. But he did 4-foot, $14.5 million. Can you imagine your job right now if you 4-footed $14.5 million? Now, if he just would have shown up this week, he still would have got half of that. It's $7 million. But Le'Veon Bell can get that third franchise tag next year. His salary would escalate to $25 million based on the formula involving the 5 highest-paid players. Pittsburgh's not going to pay him $25 million. But the Steelers could consider using a $14.5 million transition tag, which allows them to match any outside offer for Bell or let him walk in free agency. They're going to let him walk. They're burned. Think about where Le'Veon Bell did. He's got a chance to win a ring, and he didn't play. In the NFL, your lifespan is so small. It's like 3 years for a running back, and you wasted a year of it. Now, he didn't take the wear and tear on his body, but he wasted it. So whatever contracts he gets next year, and the Steelers offered him a lot of money last year, but it was only like $17 million guaranteed. Still, it's $17 million guaranteed. I just don't get it. Just like baseball last year. Didn't we learn our lesson on the freeze out on players? Didn't we learn our lesson on Mike Moustakas hitting 38 home runs and settling for peanuts coming back and playing for the Royals? So no matter what money he makes next year, he better make an extra $14.5 million guaranteed just to recoup the money that he lost this year. I don't get it. But I think it was a warning sign when Bell didn't do it to other running backs in the National Football League that they're not worth what they think they're worth. I'll never forget when Carl Peterson paid Priest Holmes all that money coming off that hip injury, even though they had Larry Johnson. And I know Priest was a great running back, one of the greatest running backs in his franchise history. But I do think Larry Johnson actually had a better year than Priest. The guy ran for 1,700 yards and only started 9 games. You had that guy in the roster, but you still paid him. Those days are done. Those days are done. Look at the Colts. They moved on. And they brought in Joseph Addai. They drafted him and ended up winning a Super Bowl with him. It's just a warning sign for guys like Kareem Hunt and everything else saying, you're not worth the money. You'll draft a James Conner. Look at Kareem Hunt. He's a living example for teams that you can get the NFL's leading rusher in the 3rd round. Alvin Kamara wasn't a 1st-round pick, and look how good he's doing. Arian Foster, not even drafted. Priest Holmes, the same thing. Good running backs can be found in this league, and I think that was a warning sign. who gets paid are pass rushers because it's an elite skill. That's why Dee Ford's going to get paid. 2 years ago, I was looking at what 16 of the top 20 pass rushers in the NFL were all first-round picks. You can't just plug and play somebody there. It's the same thing with shutdown corner. Those are the high-paid positions. Quarterback, pass rusher, left tackle, shutdown corner. Those are just positions you just can't slide anybody in to do. But running backs, you can. But I did feel this was a big week for the Chiefs. Only because of what happened, because of New England losing, I thought that was huge. But the Chiefs' identity on defense, it's starting to take shape. And you know what? I'd much rather it happen now in October and November than at the beginning of the season. Last four games, giving up 17 points a game. Rushing defense, not great. It's 26. Passing last, although passer rating and coverage, Steven Nelson's number two. 31 sacks for the Chiefs, and this blows me away. They've been hovering right near the top. They're at the top of the NFL. Top of the NFL in getting to the quarterback. 29 pressures last week, 13 quarterbacks hits, 5 sacks. That's playing good defense. And again, if you can build up now October, November, and December, can this defense be enough to just win 2 games to get into the Super Bowl? Chiefs are going to have a bye. They're going to be a top 2 team. It means just 2 playoff games to get them to the promised land. This could be the year, and this is looking like the year, because the defense is stepping up when they absolutely had to step up. I don't care what happened in September. That's gone. What happens now in November and December? Can the defense keep building? 17 points a game in the last 4? It's 4th in the NFL. That'll play. Let's go to the phone lines and talk to a guy out in Anaheim who's probably really thrilled that the Chiefs are going to be in L.A. because I'd hope he'd be at the game, Reggie in Anaheim.
Yeah, here's the thing, though. I'm going to be in Kansas City for the Chiefs-Raiders game on the 30th of December, and then I'll be at the Jayhawk game on the 29th. So I think my sports budget is stretched a little thin, but if somebody come up with some tickets, I might get some scout a little bit later this week. But I'm excited they coming out to L.A., man. That's like a big prize fight out here right now. Everybody's talking about it.
Do people care about football in L.A., Reggie?
No, yeah. I mean, you know, your diehards do, but not really. It's a Laker town. It's a Laker town, man. So everybody's always talking about LeBron and the Lakers. I mean, you get a little bit of Rams here and there, but it's a Laker town. What I wanted to ask you, though, is you was bringing up the running back situation about Le'Veon Bell, and I'm on Le'Veon's side on this, only because, you know, you're as a running back, man, you don't get a whole lot of leeway. You know, receivers and quarterbacks get more money than running backs. And what I wanted to ask you was, I was talking to my friend about this last night. Kareem Hunt's got going to be coming up here pretty soon. Kareem Hunt makes $800,000 a year. So my question is, what per year are you willing, would you be comfortable paying Kareem Hunt, given that Bell and David Johnson are getting about $14 million a year? Obviously, the Chiefs won't be able to pay Kareem Hunt $14 million, but the average is about $8 million a year. Would you be comfortable with giving Kareem Hunt between $8 and $10 million guaranteed per year? To be the running back, because, you know, in this offense, he's going to be able to produce a lot more numbers than he would, say, in Miami when he's running against 8-man boxes.
Well, he's got one more year. I would not hesitate on the franchise with him. And again, if you franchised him, you would have gotten 4 good years out of Kareem. But you know as well as I do, Reggie, you hit that wall in this league, especially running backs. And not only that, he's different than Alvin Kamara at New Orleans, because Alvin wasn't used a ton in Tennessee. He was kind of a sporadic back that didn't take the hits. Kareem Hunt was used a ton for 4 years at Toledo. I mean, he was running a ton. So Reggie's gone. So I don't know. I mean, I'm not a big fan of paying running backs. Again, I brought up the Colts. Edgerrin James, one of the best running backs ever there. They go and draft Joseph Addai. I just take stabs at running backs. Go out and try to find one. Try to find that next guy. It's a tough thing, man, finding a running back in the NFL that can translate. But they can. Wasn't it Louis Riddick that was talking about the Senior Bowl that Brett Veach came up to and said, watch this guy. Watch this guy, Kareem Hunt. I mean, they were on this guy for a long time. Brett Veach, and he wasn't even the GM at the time, but Brett Veach had Andy Reid watching Maction like I do on a Tuesday night just to see Toledo. Anyway, Jeffrey Flanagan. We'll talk a little Royals next.
Bing at night.
Time to switch a few gears here and talk to the number one Royals source in this city, Jeffrey Flanagan, MLB.com, covers everything Kansas City Royals. I had a few questions, and I thought, you know what? I'm going to hit up Flanny tonight because I need some answers. What's up, Flanny?
How we doing, Beck?
How you doing this offseason?
Not too bad. You know, it's kind of a challenge to come up with stories every week, but just got to get creative.
Yeah, you're going to be bored this year at the winter meetings.
Probably. You know, they're probably going to make some, you know, cost-efficient bullpen signings. And you never know. They might make a trade or two. There's certainly going to be a lot of talk about Whit Merrifield. I don't think anything's going to happen, but that's certainly going to dominate the rumors.
Yeah, I'll get in that in just a second. I was curious. You know my feelings being at the ballpark about Brad Keller and, you know, making a case for American League Rookie of the Year. Not that he was going to win it, but just to be in the conversation with it, because I look at all these other pitchers that had similar years, and I look at Jack Flaherty that got votes in the National League, and his ERA plus was 116, and Keller sitting here at 139. I mean, Keller's numbers very similar to Michael Fulmer that won American League Rookie of the Year. Maybe it was because he was under the radar, maybe because he was in Kansas City, but
yeah,
I think he was certainly worth a bone.
Absolutely. I mean, we had done at MLB.com, we had done kind of a writer's poll every week. And if you noticed, there was always one vote for Brad Keller that came in from the 30 of us. And it was always me, just because I thought he at least deserved the top three or top four vote. And I didn't have a Rookie of the Year vote this year with the BBWA. And my vote's American League MVP, but I think, which comes up tomorrow. But if I had a Rookie of the Year vote, I certainly would have at least given him a top five because he deserved that. You mentioned the ERA plus and just the type of season he had. And you know, so many hitters I talked to around the league just said he was a tough guy to face. It just was an uncomfortable at bat. Had a terrific year, unbelievable Rule 5 pick by the Royals there. And certainly should be a top-of-the-rotation guy going forward.
What do you think their big thing this offseason is, Flanny? I know Dayton, you know, was talking about the bullpen, and certainly he's got candidates from some of these guys that we saw, you know, at the end of the year, like Skoglund, you know, whether he makes the rotation or not. I mean, they actually showed they had some pitching depth where they have all five spots. I think they're going to be full. I'm not sure they need to go out and get anything, and you have Jesse Hahn coming back. I think they actually have options in that bullpen. I don't know about the bottom of the bullpen or the back end, but I know – well, Willie Peralta's coming back, so we know that that's solved. But 7-8, I think the Royals are actually going to have competition.
Well, I think – Jesse Hahn's not going to pitch for quite a while yet. I mean, he's on that six-month Seth Maness program. But you mentioned the depth. I think that – I mentioned it a few times in stories. This is the most rotation depth I think I can remember going into a season with all the young kids, the Heath Stillmeyers, the Jorge Lopez, he mentioned Skoglund, Sparkman. Scott Barlow is really, you know, throwing it well in Japan right now. And you've got your regular five starters. So, as a matter of fact, it's kind of coincidental. I just talked to Dayton yesterday morning about all this stuff. And I'm going to have a story tomorrow at MLB.com, Royals.com, about their bullpen and what they expect to do with it. They're going to certainly look internal first and the five guys who don't make the rotation, I mean, the four guys maybe who don't make the rotation, Dayton was pretty adamant that they're going to get shots in the bullpen. So they may not have to go out. I don't think they're going to, you know, they're not going to spend a lot of money, obviously, with the payroll cutback, but they might pick up a cost-efficient reliever. You know, they're pretty good at finding guys like Ryan Madsen and, you know, Joe Blanton and guys like that. So they'll be on the prowl for that. But I think, you know, internally they're going to try to find some guys right now in the system to fill out that bullpen. And who knows what their roles are going to be. It could be up in the air. about who sets up Willie.
I mean, there's so many names like Richard Lovelady, Josh Staumont, Trevor Oakes. Yeah. I mean, there's just so many options. I do want to ask you about Barlow, though. He is over in Japan playing with Whit Merrifield, and it kind of surprised me. It kind of surprised me that Barlow was one of those guys they picked just because of the just severe limited opportunity in Major League Baseball he got this year, but somehow he got the call for that team.
Yeah, I think a lot of it's, you know, players in the offseason aren't generally enthused about traveling half across the world. So you're going to get a different kind of player, you know, with, you know, it's exciting for him. And obviously, you know, Scott Barlow's exciting for him. And the team submits the names, too. So I think they wanted to get Barlow some work against some major league competition rather than just go to a regular winter ball league. And I was watching, I don't know if you saw some of the highlights of Barlow mm-hmm. the other night. He started four and two-thirds, something like that.
He was good.
Yeah, I mean, the ball was just moving. I mean, it was like, it looked like a wiffle ball up there, just breaking 3-4 feet. And he's not a hard thrower. We saw him up here for, what, 6 games. And, you know, the velo's not fantastic, but there's a lot of movement on his pitches. And that's the key for any pitcher, and then commanding that. And when I talked to Dayton about him yesterday, too, he was pretty fired up. He goes, man, he's really pitching lights out. And we're excited to get him to spring training. So you can throw him into the mix, too, next spring.
You know, one thing that I always tell people that may have just kind of tuned the Royals out around the All-Star break time, and I get it, they're 41 games under 500, but
yeah,
it was a fun brand of baseball. I'm not going to lie to you. I enjoyed going to the park every day. I mean, 5 games under the second half of the season. And I'll tell you one guy that just kept me interested because I kept talking on the postgame every night. He does something every night, and it's Adalberto Mondesi. Whether it was defense, it's the power that he possesses. His average home run distance was more than anybody. He could hit him from the left, the right, and stealing bases. I know Witt led Major League Baseball in stolen bases, but Mondesi is just a freak. That Ned told us one night he thought he could be a 60 to 80 stolen base guy, which I think he can be a 30 home run guy and like 60 stolen bases. Is that real, what we saw from him?
I think so. I mean, they've been waiting for this for a long time. And the big thing is he stayed healthy. I mean, he had a couple of little nicks here and there, but mostly he stayed healthy and played a lot down the stretch, and that's the way they planned it out. You remember when fans were really griping about him not playing enough, mm-hmm. you know, in July and stuff, and that was all part of the organizational plan to just bring him along slowly, keep him healthy, and then kind of gun it at the end to see what he could bring. And 32 steals in, what, 77 games, you know, you do the math there, that's 60, over 60 right there. And it's not just the steals, which are fantastic, and the power, but, you know, how about his home to first times, you know, and first to third times? I mean, you're right. I mean, he's just an exciting, exciting player. And he's stealing bases just on speed alone. He's not even really at that stage yet, like Witt, where he can read the pitcher's moves and stuff like that. He's just going and daring them to throw him out. I mean, he can get, you know, picked off first and still steal the base. So, it's going to be exciting year there. You got Witt coming back. They finished, 20-14 in their last 34 games?
And yeah.
You're right. It was an exciting brand of ball. I think that's a positive thing going into spring.
It really was, and he was fun to watch. And I know that the Whit Merrifield conversation comes up. And here's the thing, Flanny. And I've tried to, you know, go through this, and I get asked this a lot. With Merrifield and, you know, the outfield, is going to be a crowded outfield this year. And I know Nicky Lopez is high on the radar for the Kansas City Royals. And Mondesi, you know, once Ned bounced him around at second short, but, man, towards August and September, he did not leave shortstop. I mean, that was where he was planted. Whit Merrifield was a guy, to me, Flanny, I'm not sure where he's going to fit in, what they're going to do with him. I always wondered, because I know he played third base a little bit a couple years ago. I just didn't know if that would be a spot for him. And again, it just makes his trade value that much more.
Yeah, I think he's going to be right back at second base for at least the immediate future. You mentioned Nicky Lopez. He's a guy that doesn't have to go on the 40 for a while. So there's no reason to rush. And same with Richard Lovelady. There's no reason to rush those guys right now. You value those 40 round spots with everything you got. And, you know, even if he had a terrific, terrific spring, I still don't know if he'd make a starting job. Because, for one thing, they don't want to bring him up. Club officials do not want to bring him up unless he starts. every day. He's not going to come up and just be a utility guy backing up Witt or Mondi. So, you know, he could use another year at AAA, give him a case next year, and then, you know, make that decision next fall. He'll have to go on the 40 then, and so will Lovelady. But I think he's going to probably start out with the same kind of lineup we ended September with Hunter Dozier, who you saw it yourself. I mean, defensively, he really improved at third base once he settled in there and he started playing there regularly. And Ryan O'Hearn at first, and you know, he might get a little competition from Frank Schwindel going into spring training. And then I kind of think the infield set, you know, obviously Salvi behind the plate, Alex in left. The battle is going to be center field and right field, and maybe DH a little bit because you got to figure out where to put Soler in. But they're hoping Bonnie bounces back and right. And I think privately they'd really like to see Brett Phillips be able to hit the ball because we know what he can do defensively in center field.
Absolutely. Did you think this was Salvi's best year defensively?
Defensively?
Yeah.
It was pretty darn close. I mean, you throw out 52% of runners, and I thought he was pretty good blocking pitches than he had been in previous years. And maybe the time off, you know, helped him. He missed, what, the first three and a half weeks.
Yeah.
And, you know, Ned was pretty good at resting him. So maybe that helps him in the long term. He certainly had won the Silver Slugger Award, so, you know, 27 homers in that park with 80 ribs, that's pretty decent. He'd certainly like to have had a better on-base percentage and all that good stuff, but pretty darn solid year, especially in the second half for him.
Yeah, and final thing for you, Flanny, and I asked Dayton Moore this question, and I thought his answer was pretty interesting at his end-of-the-year press conference because I asked him about some of the younger arms like Brady Singer and Jackson Coar and Lynch. Are they ready to move on? Because Coar and Lynch were so instrumental in Lexington winning the South Atlantic title. Because Finnegan, you know, he played in College World Series and played there this year. And I loved his answer. They need time on the bus in minor leagues to learn the system because they played in the SEC where they travel on private jets. So it sounds like he may take his time with these guys and that kind of, you know, push them through the system just because they're college arms that probably could be here sooner rather than later.
Well, I think also, too, though, to be fair, I mean, he'd like them to force his decision. But, yeah, they do need some time in the minors. I mean, pro ball is so much different than what they experienced in college. I mean, you know, the daily grind of it. But, you know, and the other thing, too, is that it's easy to say, hey, just promote this guy, promote. Well, you got guys above him who are also pretty good athletes who, you know, you can't just release everybody to make way for, you know, make a way for these guys to get in. So it has to be calculated and targeted how they advance these guys through the system. But certainly they do need some time in the minors. But, boy, if one of those guys just, you know, forced their hand, I don't think they'd be too upset.
Well, I'm excited about it. I'm excited about the season. I think there's a lot of things to look forward to. The Kansas City Royals.
It's going to be pretty fun.
If you slept through it, wake up because it's going to be fun baseball this year. Jeff Flanagan is the best in the business. At Flanny MLB, the guy knows the Royals better than any human being out there. And enjoy your offseason, Flanny, and happy holidays to you, and it's great talking to you. All right, my friend?
You too, man. Take care, bud.
There you go, Jeff Flanagan right there. Dusty was out there with me. He knows. Dusty knows how much fun this team was. Adalberto Mondesi, watching him might have been one of the most fun things. Again, 23-year-olds dominating the city. Mondesi, 23. Keller, 23. Pat Mahomes, 23. Future's bright in Kansas City sports. But are Kansas City Chiefs fans waiting for the other shoe to drop? We'll discuss that next.
Bing at night.
Open another cold one. Not a beer, just a another Nos. Well, text line thinks I'm drunk, so I might as well just play along with it. I had to come in here some night and just get hammered. Just do a show completely hammered. Like Facebook Live, whenever I sit around and drink a lot of beer on Facebook Live.
I think you should probably just stick to doing that on Facebook Live.
I could. So Yahoo put this thing up. Remember Booger last night? Which is a great name, by the way. Booger McFarland says that he was talking about Eli Manning, kind of putting him down. You know, wondering if he was a Hall of Fame candidate, stuff like that. And I got to thinking, how ridiculous is that? Of course, he's a Hall of Famer. I mean, you think of the numbers he's put up, Dustman. And I know he's not looking great right now, but we live in such a what-have-you-done-for-me society. He's got two Super Bowl rings. Both times he beat the Patriots. So if you're going to win a big game, beating the New England Patriots in the Super Bowl is pretty damn impressive, including a time when that team was going for the 72 Dolphins and being undefeated. He's been Super Bowl MVP twice, Walter Payton Man of the Year. People don't realize this. He's sixth all-time in passing yards, seventh all-time in touchdown passes, sixth all-time in completions. That's Hall of Fame worthy, correct?
Yeah, I mean, on those accolades, I'm sure that you could, you know, play your comparison to him to other quarterbacks. And, you know, you look at Terry Bradshaw. He's got a lot of more. He's got two more Super Bowl rings than Eli, but his numbers are not as good.
No.
But he's in. But to be fair, I will say, like, the NFL Hall of Fame is a little bit more easier to get in than any other Hall of Fame. Like.
No. Basketball is.
Okay.
Yeah. Baseball, I think, is the toughest.
Sure, yeah, because Grant Hill just got into the Hall of Fame in the NBA. But if you look at the NFL Hall of Fame, like, basically Eli Manning, to give him a contrast and or to give him a comparable player in MLB that's not in the Hall of Fame who's had several accolades in their career would be like Curt Schilling. Multiple champion, high up in the record books, but Curt Schilling's never going to get into the Baseball Hall. I won't say never. Curt Schilling's probably not going to get into the Baseball Hall of Fame. Baseball Hall of Fame kind of holds their standards a little bit higher, and they kind of look at what you've done, like if you've cheated or not. Now,
well, the NFL doesn't care about steroid use or whatever.
Yeah, because everybody does it.
Well, they assume you do.
Skeptical, yes. They assume that there's a lot of things they can't control. But the thing about Eli Manning is just, if he's based on two championships and those numbers, I mean, he's played for how many years?
When we say you got to win the ring to be in consideration,
sure.
He's won it twice. And not only that, he beat the Patriots both times. He beat Belichick. And he's Super Bowl MVP twice. And he's top seven in yardage, completions, touchdown passes. That's good. I know his name's not Peyton, but those are Hall of Fame numbers. And I know it's how he's finishing his career. Jerry Rice wasn't very good at the end either.
Yeah, but Eli's been, like, not that great for, like, the last 4 years.
I get it, but it's what he's done, though. It would be hard for me to take a guy that's a quarterback, because that 1 year, the first Super Bowl he won, he carried him through the postseason. Remember how cold it was when he went to Lambeau and beat the Packers?
It
was freezing where Tom Coughlin's, like, face was bright red.
It's always bright red, though.
It was brighter red.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I feel like his career is a little tainted just because of, like, where he plays football. I feel like the New York media kind of has a little bit more of a say on, like, how he is viewed, how he is looked at through the media microscope. But I also feel that, like, he had just, like, a short span of, like, career numbers where he was really, really good. If you think about it, like, they won both of their Super Bowls in dramatic fashion, correct? One was, like, the great catch by David Tyree on his helmet, and then that changed momentum. We can both agree that in football, it just takes one play. For instance, this past Sunday when Justin Houston ripped that ball out of the air and intercepted it, the complete game set changed. Like, at first it was like, it's Arizona, boring game, preseason feel. Then Justin Houston kind of wakes everybody up with that interception. All of a sudden it was like, okay, we're the better team. Let's put these guys to bed. Eli Manning gets that pass to David Tyree. The entire Super Bowl changes. We go on to the next Super Bowl. They come back from behind because of a couple weird plays, and things just happen. I mean, I get it. Eli Manning will be a Hall of Famer. He has two rings. He has a lot of accolades in the NFL. But if you look at how many yards he's thrown, look at how many interceptions he's thrown. Look at his completion percentage. Look at all those other numbers, too. Because, yeah, the flash and the bang is there. The yards, the touchdowns, the years, the championships. But also look at all the incompletions, all the interceptions, all the sacks taken. Those are up there, too. So it's kind of a yin and a yang with Eli Manning.
Well, what's interesting is Pat Mahomes just broke Lynn Dawson's record of 30 touchdowns this weekend.
Easily.
Which, you were here last week. I was saying that's as ridiculous a record as Steve Balboni's 36 home runs.
But it didn't have the same feel.
But here's the thing, though. Eli's done that over three times. He's passed over 30 touchdowns three times. You look, even towards when people said he really started to slip. 2014, threw for 4,410 yards, 30 touchdowns. 2015, 4,400 yards, 35 touchdowns.
How many interceptions in those
years? 2016, 4,000 yards. His interceptions going back to 14 or 14, 14, 16, 13, and 6. Okay. He did have a lot of them. He had 27 of them back in 2013. And it was a bad year. It was a bad year for Eli.
The other thing about Eli is that his look is just so lethargic.
He's led the NFL, by the way, 3 times in interceptions.
Yeah, 3 times. So, like, the thing about Eli is that I think he's also just not, like, he's not the best-selling package. Like, Aaron Rodgers is a great selling package for a Hall of Fame career. He's also the best quarterback I've ever seen. John Elway is a great selling package for a Hall of Fame career. All these guys are great selling points. You look at Eli Manning, it just always looks like he's just like, I don't know. He just has like that blank expression, like the Jay Cutler type expression. And by the way, I'm pretty sure Jay Cutler has a higher passer rating than Eli Manning. I could be wrong on that, but I'm pretty sure I researched that today. And if
Eli, what were you researching that for?
I don't know. I was just looking around because this conversation's been going around on Twitter all day about Eli Manning. I've also heard that Philip Rivers has had better numbers than Eli Manning and doesn't have the championships, but Eli Manning's not considered his Hall of Fame. I'm pretty sure Cutler has a higher passer rating.
All right, completion percentage for Jay Cutler in his career is 62%.
And Eli's is?
Eli's is 60.2.
Boom. Now, what are their quarterback ratings throughout their careers?
QBR.
For one Mr. Cutler.
See, his average rating for Cutler is 85.3.
Okay.
Manning's is 83.9. He's got a 92.7 this year, so 83.9 for Eli Manning.
Cutler, your guy. Smoking cigs on the sideline. Great reality TV show.
But Manning's is 3% higher.
Okay. But Cutler kind of got some similar numbers there.
Manning's played 04 to 018.
Okay.
Cutler played 06 to 017.
Uh-huh.
Cutler's got 227 touchdowns, 160 picks. Eli Manning touchdowns 350
okay.
and 234 picks.
So way more interceptions. Just say Cutler's kind of had similar numbers. It doesn't have the rings.
His record, his record as a quarterback, 103 and 110. That's Eli. Cutler's record, 74 and 79.
And then also, one of those Super Bowl years, didn't the Giants limp in with like a 9-7 or like an 8-8 or almost?
Yeah, that's the year that Manning carried him.
I guess. I don't think a team would be.
He's got 2 Super Bowl MVPs, that's us, man.
Well, who else were you going to give it to on those teams? He hasn't taken Odell to the Super Bowl. He's had the best receiver in the game. Can't take him to the Super Bowl.
I just don't see how we can keep a guy out.
He also had a great defense.
It's top 7 in every category and 2 Super Bowl MVPs and said he's not a Hall of Famer.
I didn't say he's a Hall of Famer. I'm just saying that if he's a Hall of Famer, then we have to look at other people and we have to put this ring talk to bed. I get it. Lots of rings. Rings are accolades that get you notoriety and get you into the league, a la Ben Roethlisberger. Ben Roethlisberger is also a great quarterback and is a, you know, definitive Hall of Famer. Eli Manning, those defenses were pretty good those years they won the Super Bowl. I'm just saying Eli Manning is a Hall of Famer by, I mean, just like simplistic stats.
I mean, we sit here and say Andy Reid's a Hall of Famer. He's never won a Super Bowl.
Yeah, well, he's got, I mean, it's very similar. I mean, he doesn't have the rings.
Who has more Super Bowls, Eli or Peyton? They're tied.
Yeah, okay. I'll give you this, though. When Eli Manning was going through those runs with the Giants, was it because Eli Manning was their quarterback? Like it is the way that Patrick Mahomes is.
Like 1 year it was. 1 year it was a lot of Eli Manning in the postseason.
They just had a really good defense on those teams. Like they had Michael Strahan 1 year that had all those sack records, which don't get me started on Michael Strahan because he was calling out some players the other day about hustle or something like that, and then Brett Favre laid down for him for the sack record, which he premeditated before the game. So don't get me on that. But I'm just saying, like, those Giants defenses were pretty good when Eli was going through those playoff runs.
He's 8-4 in the postseason, 18 touchdowns, 9 picks, 87.4 rating in the postseason. Not bad.
No, it's not bad. I mean, he's going to be a Hall of Famer, but it's just one of those things where it's like when it's all said and done and everybody has the dinner and they have the jackets, there's going to be a lot of those guys, Bink, that when Eli comes walking in the room, they're going to be like, oh, crap, Eli's coming. I got to take this phone call. And they don't really have a phone call. They just don't want to talk to him because it doesn't really belong. Like when Favre and Marino and T.O. and Randy and all these guys, yes, I'm calling him by a first-name basis. Like I text him on the daily. Moss, I mean, by Randy. Like those guys, when those guys had their conversations about, hey, when we were doing this, and Eli walks up and he's like, hey, guys, how you doing? Like, oh, God, here comes Peyton's brother that got two Super Bowls and put a couple good years together with the defense. I guess he's all right. Like, when he stands next to Michael Strahan, like, when they introduce people at the Hall of Fame, Michael Strahan will be the guy that's like, hey, guys, here's Eli. It's not going to be Eli. Here's Strahan. Here's Michael. No, it's going to be, hey, guys, here's Eli. Why does Eli need that? Because everyone knows that those two Super Bowl rings have weighed his career over. So, yeah.
I bet he still sits at the children's table at Thanksgiving.
Yes.
Even though he's got the two rings. I bet Peyton and Archie at the big boy table. I bet Eli's just scrunched over on this little table with, like, these seven-year-old kids.
And now one brother does, like, these most corny interviews on, like, CBS or Fox before football games. I watched it the other day. He was talking to, I forget who it was, about doing snaps, like being a center, doing snaps. And I was just like, this guy's more liked than Eli. And he's just a corny cob. But, yeah, I don't know. It's just – it is what it is, man. Like, Eli's going to get in. And, like, everybody said on the text line right now, like, not everybody, but this – what is it? The 707? They said most quarterbacks that win the Super Bowl get the MVP.
Not all of them do. Von Miller's not a quarterback.
No, but he single-handedly won that game.
Malcolm Smith's not a quarterback.
Okay. Who won MVP?
Santonio Holmes isn't a quarterback.
Santonio Holmes.
Hines Ward isn't a quarterback.
I know.
Deion Branch isn't a quarterback.
You're picking out very.
Dexter Jackson isn't a quarterback.
I'm done.
Ray Lewis isn't a quarterback.
Ray Lewis didn't win Super Bowl MVP this first time.
Terrell Davis wasn't a quarterback. Desmond Howard wasn't a quarterback. Larry Brown wasn't a quarterback. Emmitt Smith wasn't a quarterback.
Must be nice when you have all those numbers in front of you.
Otis Anderson wasn't a quarterback. Jerry Rice wasn't a quarterback.
Go to break.
John Riggins wasn't a quarterback. I rest my case. We talk about something fun going on right now. Next.
Bing at night.
According to that gal that I mentioned earlier that covers the Rams for the ESPN, the Rams are out watching the Nuggets tonight, the Nuggets and Rockets. Isn't that cute? They're having a little vacation out in Colorado. They don't want to fly home.
Hopefully they're just watching NBA.
So they're going to be used to this altitude. Then they're going to go back to L.A. and play. So I don't know, man. You know, Chiefs are sitting here resting up, chilling, heading to L.A. I think the Chiefs are looking forward to going. No, the reason I was talking about this, the thing fun, Dusty, is always the track planes. This is what Kansas football media is doing. Jesse Newell, who covers the Jayhawks for the Kansas City Star, earlier he tweeted, and this just always kills me, the KU charter plane just took off from Lawrence Municipal Airport with occupants entering via a side road, not accessible to the public. We did not see who was on the flight. Flight tracker info has that plane destined for Baton Rouge, Louisiana. I love these things, man. I love when we are tracking planes and we're talking about the Kansas job. We're not exactly talking about, you know, keeping this thing a classified government secret. It's not one of those things, but you got to see this, man. Here's another one. Text from Jesse Newell. And I love it. He's just doing his job. I love it. For any flight, there must be a flight plan submitted to the FAA. Today, there was a flight plan submitted for both, and he gives the tail number, a couple tail numbers from Lawrence to Baton Rouge. According to FAA website, the N412KU tail number has not been assigned to any aircraft, a.k.a. the plane doesn't exist.
Fake planes?
We're taking planes and we're being secretive of who goes. This Matt Galloway tweets. He covers, what's he cover? KUB reporter for the CJ Online. He reported this. And it's got a picture of Bob Bowlesby walking off a plane at the airport. And it says, Big 12 Commissioner Bob Bowlesby has arrived at the Lawrence Municipal Airport on a flight from Dallas. He has a speaking engagement tonight at KU. That explains the KU athletics van out front. Quote, you guys are nuts standing out here in this weather, he says. So the Bowlesby threw them all off. Like, oh, my God, here comes this plane. Is it Seth Luttrell from North Texas?
Many of your cohorts have said I won this debate.
Is Les Miles hanging out in Dallas? Who's it going to be? And I get it, man. If you're a KU football fan, and I know there's some diehard ones, man, this can change your whole program around. You got to get the right guy. To me, it's an exciting time. Because K-State's going to be in this situation here soon. Where they're sitting here looking, and you know what? KU and K-State, in my opinion, will fish in that same pool. They'll be fishing in the exact same pool when it comes looking for a head coach. Who's going to Lawrence? And again, I think the biggest recruiting tool if you're head coach of Kansas football, you take them to Allen Fieldhouse and you let Bill Self recruit them. Actually, you bring Bill Self in the room, say, hey, look at these recruits. I got this quarterback from Louisiana.
I don't know if Bill Self wants to get on recruits for football after what's been going on in basketball.
I bet he could do it, though.
Oh, for sure.
I'll tell you, man, you could take Bill Self at any car lot out here, any car sales job, he'd be the number one salesman. He just would be. That's what coaches are. They're great salesmen. I'll tell you who's a great salesman as well. It's Dusty Likens, Dirty Werewolf. Dusty L. Likens, the fourth. It was the third yesterday. He's the fourth today. We'll see you guys tomorrow. Beak at Night, 6 to 9 tomorrow. Let's have some fun. See ya.
I think I did a good job.
Beak at Night.